This is Pure Decking for whatever the hell today's date is. This is the show about stuff that interests me, like how everyone is living vicariously through cell phones now, information security, and apparently building robot masturbators. I'm Morps. I am drinking Eagle Rare. I have 2.5-3 fingers left in this glass. And tonight, Fox. Fox, what are you drinking?
Right now I've got Lion Kugel's Summer Shandy.
Oh, fancy. We have Madman.
Hello. I'm drinking Hi. Guinness Blonde.
Okay, I was trying to come up with a joke for Guinness Blonde, and you'd think it'd be off the tip of the tongue, but it's really not. Suave,
oh, it's the dumbest of the beers. It's a blonde.
It's a blonde, yeah.
If Suave. You put a scratch and stiff sticker at the bottom of a pool, it'll drown.
That's when you try to get that bottle mouth-to-mouth.
Well, do me a favor. Make fun of Madman's beer and tell me what you're drinking.
I am drinking a gin and tonic.
Fuck yeah.
All right. I don't know about anybody else's week. I've been busy as hell. Hopefully things will start to calm down for me, though, here in the next couple of weeks. Working towards a goal. I don't know about you guys, but at least that's the way it's going for me. So,
good.
That's why there's no new G15 stuff. That's why I haven't read on the site. That's why I'm still using the old broadcast box. Hopefully this is the last show on the old broadcast box, but it is doing slightly better today for some reason. It's like the old XP days where your computers used to develop personalities. Like this broadcast box is doing that. You know, pretty soon it's just going to start coming over the soundboard. Kill me! You know.
It's becoming sentient. Shoot it before it figures out how to use your guns.
I'd be impressed if I come home and it's like built a little robot arm and it's holding a gun. That would just be like, you know, that would be amazing.
All right, for one, support the robot uprising.
Yeah, there we go. So, anyways, the lead story tonight is from Washington Post. Last week, the Supreme Court dealt a major blow to corporations that try to use patent law as a weapon against other firms, saying that companies can only be sued for patent infringement in places they actually do business. Now, the court has ruled again along those same lines, handing a victory to consumer groups in a case about printer cartridges, or more specifically, toner cartridges, the kind used by laser printers. The case has huge implications for the way we think about technology ownership in America and your rights as a user. The case is called Impression Products versus Lexmark. Lexmark does a lot of business with corporate customers, so if you work in an office, you probably know the name from seeing it on your printers or the little crappy $30 printers at Walmart. I believe those are also Lexmarks. You know, the ones where it's actually cheaper to replace the printer than it is to buy toner for it?
Yep.
Although the toner cartridges they give you with it only have like 10 or 20% of the ink that a regular cartridge has.
It's still cheaper.
Yeah.
So, anyways, those machines rely on toner cartridges, so this must be changed every so often when they run out, just like ink cartridges in your home printer. Because apparently the people who read Washington Post have no concept of what a laser printer is. And just like home printing, laser printing hinges on razor and blades business model, where much of the manufacturer's income depends on the reliable sale of new toner cartridges. To protect its business model, Lexmark basically did some things that make it harder for people to get cheap used cartridges on the secondhand market. Those tactics were designed to make it more likely for customers to choose Lexmark's own cartridges, according to the court. While there is nothing specifically illegal about this, the court said the company, such as Lexmark, can't try to use patent laws to stop other companies, such as Impression, from reselling its old cartridges. So companies like Impression make money by buying up old toner cartridges, refilling them with more toner, and then selling them at a lower price than what Lexmark charges. Lexmark argued that by refurbishing and reselling its cartridges without permission and outside the terms of Lexmark's service agreement with end users, Impression was violating the patent that Lexmark held on the cartridges. For one thing, how the hell did Lexmark patent toner cartridges? Essentially, Lexmark was saying that its patent rights extended beyond the initial sale of the cartridge to cover even future resales. So these weren't like the knockoff Chinese cartridges. These were actually used toner cartridges where somebody drilled a hole in it, refilled it, and put the little plug in it. We used to do this ourselves to say, you know, keep printers going, especially old ones where you can't buy the cartridges anymore. Fox, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, actually, hell, everybody's pretty much done that with inkjets until they started putting the little chips in them where you couldn't do it anymore. So the practical question is, how much Lexmark or any other company can control what you do with the things you buy? The debate is not limited to printer cartridges. If you buy a car, how much do you really own it? And what does the ownership entitle you to do with your property? These issues fit into a broader fight over what some experts call the right to tinker. The thinking goes, if you buy something, you should be free to do whatever the hell you want with it. Sell it, modify it, even destroy it. But some companies, even car manufacturers, have sought to put limits on that freedom. They make arguments such as Lexmark's, where handling a product in a way that potentially undermines the company's business leads to alleged violation of patent or copyright protections. In this view, the customer may think that she owns the physical property outright, but she is still constrained by an invisible cage made of corporate intellectual property. The Supreme Court disagreed with the view. To help make its case, Chief Justice John G. Roberts Jr. used an analogy. Take a shop that restores and sells used cars. The business works because the shop can rest assured that so long as those bringing in the cars own them, the shop is free to repair and resell the vehicles. That smooth flow of commerce would sputter if companies that made thousands of parts that go into a vehicle could keep their patent rights after the first sale. I don't know that it's even patent right, because I thought patent rights were about manufacturing.
That's the case NKC is using. It's like no one's like manufacturing your cartridge, selling it as their own, and pretty much the analogy I was probably going to use was, yeah, hey, I want to, you know, sell my car, or oh, what do you think the end user, now that they own your BMW, if they want to cover it in duct tape and glitter, you know, yep, there's your freaking BMW badge on the hood. It looks like a hoopty piece of shit, but you know, you can't stop them from doing it.
Roberts went on to say that the used car shop could be sued by patent holders under such a system, and that even if the parts makers didn't follow through, the implied threat of lawsuits would be enough to force the shop to spend lots of money to safeguard against them. What Roberts is saying has enormous implications for the economy, which depends not only on consumers buying things from companies, but also companies buying things from consumers and individual consumers trading with each other. It also affects people building new innovations in their garage out of off-the-shelf products. In short, what you can do with the stuff you buy has real ramifications for the American's way of life. This debate over ownership is only going to get more complicated as the world moves to digital goods, including subscription-based streaming. With apps like Spotify, for example, consumers are choosing to rent, not buy. The spiraling digital economy raises new questions for legal experts about access and ownership. The next logical steps will be for courts to recognize that people who buy digital goods are owners of those goods, not mere licensees, and can resell and tinker with their digital goods to the same extent as purchasers of tangible property, said the Electronic Frontier Foundation, a consumer group that, yeah, we all know who they are. In view of Lexmark, I expect the technology owners will diversify their legal strategies used to protect their products. So, and while the Supreme Court specifically said they can't use patent law to go after cartridge resellers, it did not rule out other methods of getting what the company wanted. Lexmark runs a program where customers get a discount on toner cartridges if they agree to use the cartridge just once and then return the spent cartridge back to the company. The deal is subject to a contract that customers have to sign if they want to participate in the program. Pretty soon they're going to be signing that contract to even buy the printers. So the court said, assuming these contracts are lawful, there's nothing preventing Lexmark from going after their customers if they resell the cartridges. Still, this reflects only part of Lexmark's issue with impression, and it doesn't help Lexmark's patent argument at all. There is no single-use, no-resell. The single-use, no-resell restriction in Lexmark's contracts with consumers may have been clear and enforceable under contract law, wrote Roberts, but they do not entitle Lexmark to retain patent rights in an item that it has elected to sell. So, anyways,
you know, like with something like this, yeah, sure, this one court case got thrown out, but you said it was at the Supreme Court.
Supreme Court. So nothing can override.
This has been going through the courts for a while. Like it takes a while to get to the Supreme Court, and guaranteed they're going to go after them again with another lawsuit based on something else. Like, even if it's frivolous and it gets tossed out, it still ends up costing these smaller companies money. And when you're a big, massive corporation like Lexmark, you can afford to litigate them until the end of time.
And you just bankrupt them in legal fees.
Yeah.
That's one reason organizations like the Electronic Freedom Foundation exist. It's because they get a bunch of people to donate to them, and it's like, we will get enough capital to fight a case that we believe needs to be fought so that small businesses don't go bankrupt fighting them.
So, I kind of like where the court's coming from. They're like, well, no, you've sold it. You're done. It's theirs now.
Yeah, that's actually an amazing use of logic on their part. Something we don't see very much in them anymore.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, I mean that's you know, I should have had the hallelujah sound on the soundboard because, I mean, I was playing with the dramatic sounds, but obviously the whole point of this is that they've told Lexmark, no, your patent's done after you sold it. It's protected your right of first sale. When it comes to used goods, the original manufacturer doesn't have much say in it. Now, you have there has been bullshit like the Batman games, the Arkham Asylum games. You got bonus DLC if you bought it originally, but if you resold the game, only the first owner got the DLC. The second, the person you sold it to didn't get the extra content. So that didn't come up until a while later after the game was out for a bit, but you know, where people are buying it at like Game Shop and the other sites, that, you know, the people that do secondhand games, and figuring out that they're only getting about half the game because they can't register to their account because it's always already been, you know, claimed or whatever. So,
I do like them seeing I want to see this trend continue where they start treating, you know, digital property like physical property. Not making up these weird, wacky-ass, backwards laws just because it comes from the internet.
That's true. I mean, and that's usually good. If you can find a good, tight analogy to compare it to a physical good, I'm generally fine with that. It's weird if you start putting undue burdens on, oh, well, you sold somebody something over a website, so now you have to provide it for re-download forever. No.
No, but I would like that I actually own stuff I buy in iTunes. Right now, yes. I don't. Same thing with Steam. My Steam library, when I die, unless one of you guys know my username and password, it goes with me. I can't bequeath it to anyone.
Speaking of, actually, next article, and this is from Reuters.
Brings up the an issue that's probably going to become more prevalent here. In the future, is like a digital will.
It will. I think that's actually absolutely going to be a thing. And I think what you're going to start seeing is companies setting up accounts where you can say, if I'm recorded as dead, turn over the contents of my account to this other account. So if you have kids and they're on the same service like an iTunes, you can say, okay, when I die, move my library into theirs as an inheritance. Or, you know, if you've got like prominent social media accounts like Twitter and Facebook, you know, you assign another account that can take over yours in the event of your death, just so that
any company that makes money from you buying stuff from them,
it is not going to do that because they want you to buy it again
as hard as they can to prevent that sort of requirement. That's not something that's going to come easy. That's not like a logical future vision or something. Like that's kind of like this ideal thing that's probably never going to happen because these guys are going to fight it as hard as they possibly can.
Which is why what Sarge was talking about a digital will. I haven't given it any real thought. But
it's hard.
Box.
Damn it.
Na 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 Sard.
I don't have it on the soundboard.
God damn it, Morps.
It's the closest thing I got. So I'm gonna re-engineer the broadcasting system so that I can use a Novation launchpad for the soundboard. So I can have a stupid amount of buttons and forget what is on the various soundboard clips. So it'd be like halfway through the show, it's like, what did this button do? And, you know, it plays something along the lines of,
man, game over, man.
Yeah, it'll play something like that. So, but yeah, I mean, basically write your damn passwords down somewhere and put them somewhere where, I guess if you have a lawyer, you have a will. This requires trusting your lawyer.
Well, I mean, you could have your keys on like a flash drive and keep that in your safety deposit box to be transferred to so-and-so. You just have to make sure that whatever medium you store it on, like, is, you know, still current.
Flash drives have been around for a while. If you use a good one, that'll be... I mean, I don't see flash drives going away soon. However, they are going to probably start transitioning over to the USB-C port, so that could be a thing.
Yeah, that's the only problem I see with that. So I was thinking about, like, doing, like, oh, like, if you put together, like, a digital time capsule and, like, burn something onto a CD. And I'm thinking about it, like, well, shit, how many people have fucking CD drives in their computers now?
I do. That's because I wanted a Blu-ray burner.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it connects via USB, but still, it's like, it's not a prominent storage medium anymore. So I was thinking, like, oh, yeah, we bury a 50 to 100-year time capsule with a USB drive in it. You know, time that's up, you're going to have everything that's going to be able to read it.
Yeah. Oh, well, a lot of stuff's going to start requiring two-factor authentication, though, where you got to, like, verify you have a cell phone or whatever. So maybe you specify a backup cell phone that you lock in the deposit box with everything on the SD card. So, you know, there's the medium and the...
Yeah, but, like, even cell phone tech changes...
Well,
like,
I know,
cell phone tech changes every, you know, 5-10 years. So,
well, fucking
that's
cell
all
phone.
That reliable.
This would work with a Palm Pilot. The concept is that you seal it up, maybe with like a whole like order like an insane amount of like desiccant, and you know, the little packets they put in freeze dried food and shit, and you get a bunch of that stuff. And you get a Palm Pilot, a Windows Mobile, a Trio, an old iPhone, whatever. You put your digital will on that. And all the passwords just in the memo function or whatever, right? So they're just in text on the device. And you take that device, you take the charging cord for that device, and you put everything on the device so that it will still work, you know, if somebody just plugs it in and charges it, right? And you seal
it
all
up.
Yeah,
but, like, how do you
desiccant.
Keep a phone number on that?
Well, I don't know about that one. Yeah, you'd have to pay a phone bill for the rest of your life, wouldn't you? Now, you could get one of those prepaid track phone numbers that...
I don't think they let you... They might recycle the number after a while, but I was just thinking, like, okay, so thinking back, you know, okay, I've got my original Nokia 5160 Indestructo phone that's been in a safety deposit box. I plug it in and charge it up. Even if I do have a number on it, would it even connect to any of the cell towers anymore?
Those worked until very recently. I actually have had this issue. Morps can tell you how often I upgrade a phone. I had a phone dropping calls and randomly not getting calls.
I think Pluto was still a planet before he upgraded his phone last time.
And I went in to find out what the hell the problem was. And they looked at me and was like, you were getting phone calls at all? And this dude was amazed and actually called my phone number to verify that I was getting phone calls, because they had gone digital and my phone still had an analog setup.
You were probably connecting to one of the other company, like, because like AT&T sublets out to T-Mobile and that, so you were probably connecting to one of the services for one of the other companies that happens to be compatible, and it was like long routing it back, and that's why you were getting drop calls and shit.
But, yeah, so up until about 5 years ago, the brick worked.
Well, even if it... So, if you use a fairly modern smartphone, as long as they've got Wi-Fi, you might have to keep an old Wi-Fi router. So, what you're going to end up doing is you're going to have this large, sealed, hermetically sealed case with, you know, computer equipment, the router, everything you need to get this system back online. In the event, I mean, this shit would work with the Commodore 64, right? You can get this shit out and get it working again as long as you have all the component parts. So, you know, you take your Commodore 64, you take the data set and the audio tape with your text files on it.
I say, if you're just going for text files at this point, ever. Just write it down on a fucking piece of paper. Anyway, scratch that stone tablet.
I will not have a crappy will due to your lack of creativity, sir. I want to make it hard for the lawyer that's got to figure out who gets what when I die.
Like Ready Player One, you're going to engineer this like huge game for somebody to try to find your will, and whoever cracks the code gets
it. It's a scavenger hunt. It's like, what, it's a riddle? Okay, great. What did they do? Well, they really, really liked the Da Vinci Code, so...
No, so this is Morphs. It's just going to be Root the Box. Can you get in?
It's like, this flash drive contains a bootable Linux operating system. I wish you luck.
Good luck, and Godspeed.
So, but yeah, that way...
More than just leaving stuff to people, you can't sell a lot of your digital media. Like, I don't think I can sell any of my games from Steam.
Sure you can. It's just not convenient to do so. You end up... Okay, Madman. How did people sell World of Warcraft characters?
You sold the entire account.
Hence, you can, in fact, sell your Steam games.
Just not one at a time.
Well, I'm going with my individual games if I want to keep my account. Like, I can't sell Payday 2.
I thought Steam had some stuff for doing gifting.
They have stuff for doing gifting.
Not once you've claimed it.
I buy something and give it to you, but yeah. I can't play the copy that I bought. So something that I've already played, that's mine forever. I can't get rid of it.
Let's see.
I can uninstall it, but it's still mine.
Let me pick a random game in my Steam library here. Bayonetta. That'll work. Let's see. Play game.
Please tell me that's twice. A stripper with a knife.
Basically, yes.
Thank God that title was so descriptive.
Actually, she has guns now that I think on it. But anyways. I played it like twice. It's kind of fun, but it's one of those games you got to be like really drunk to enjoy. That and, you know, the fact that I've got my graphics turned up so high, the rendered game looks better than the cutscenes. That's always something nice. Yeah, I don't see any way to gift a game that I own.
Yeah. This has actually gone to court with iTunes, the iTunes store.
Mm-hmm.
People trying to sell albums that they'd purchased. There was a third-party company that actually attempted to enable this, and they've been sued out of existence.
Well, it reminds me, we've talked about people trying to leave iTunes libraries in their will, and Apple saying, no, that's not allowed. So, but next story, speaking of the whole dying and can't getting in things, this is from Robo Rooters. Parents who have... I forget, is that the way that pisses you off, Swaff? Reuters or Reuters?
Oh, no, that's RU.
That's RU.
Oh.
Yeah. I never gave a shit.
Okay, cool. Well, it's...
You
it's
said them both, so somewhere he is raging out.
Okay, cool. It's from Reuters. A German court rejected a mother's demand on Wednesday that Facebook grant her access to her deceased daughter's account. In the ruling... And this is a German court, not Facebook proper. Although for it to have gotten to court, Facebook probably said no initially. In the ruling, which overturned lower court's decision, the Berlin Court Appeals Court said the right to private telecommunications extends to electronic communication, and that meant only the eyes of certain people. Privacy remains a sensitive issue in Germany due to extensive surveillance by the communist East Germany Stasi secret police and by the Nazi era Gestapo. Really? I mean, yep. Yeah, they've got some laws, but I'm just like, does it really go all the way back to that?
Watching People, a wonderful movie that everyone should see. It's in German. I am sorry.
Memories of espionage were stirred up by Edward Snowden's 2013 revelation of prying by the United States. In the Facebook case, the mother of a 15-year-old who is, a 15-year-old who was hit and killed by a subway train in Berlin in 2012 had sought access to her daughter's account to search for clues as to whether the girl had committed suicide. Okay, that's rough. And then this. Facebook has refused access to the account, which has been memorialized, meaning it was effectively locked and served as a message board for friends and family to share memories. So I guess that's what Facebook does with an account when somebody dies, is they just turn it into a, what, I guess a virtual gravestone?
It depends if you ask them to or not.
A regional court in Berlin had ruled in favor of the mother in late 2015, stating that the daughter's contract with Facebook passed to her parents according to German laws on inheritance. It also said the girl's right to privacy was not protected because she was a minor and that it was up to her parents to protect her rights. The appeals court said on Wednesday that the right to private telecommunications outweighed the right to inheritance, and that the parents' obligation to protect their daughter's right expired with her death. Dude, you'd think Facebook would at least, like, okay, we're not going to turn it, you know, turn it back on so you can post, but, you know, at least, like, let you dump out the private messages and shit like that. Although it's Facebook, I doubt they don't delete anything. So I was going to say they probably don't have it anymore just due to age, but I bet that's not true. Facebook keeps everything. So, and that's
the last line. The last line in there.
Yeah,
the parents' obligation to protect their daughter's rights expired with her death. That's a whole can of worms for a lot of other things.
It really is.
Horrible, horrible things.
Well, dead people don't have rights, so yeah, there's no rights for them to protect anymore.
Necrophilia.
Oh, I wasn't going there. Shit, dude. We're talking about a dead 15-year-old. But, I don't know.
Oh, God, I'm horrible. I had a comeback that was even worse.
Save me, madman. Do it.
No, I'll tell you after the show. We're about digging this fucker any deeper.
You fucking pussy. You already dug deep enough to get to the bottom of that grave.
Yep. If there's grass in the corpse, play ball.
Wow. Christ, that's not okay. Right.
So that dramatic sound is kind of like the Law and Order sound.
Yep, because whoever follows that joke is going to jail.
There's no saving it now. There's just no... This is horrible. I think Facebook should have at least let the mother look at the account. I mean, they're dead. Who cares?
Yeah.
I think they should have let them. I don't think they should have been forced to do it. So I think that the court's ruling, I believe, is correct. I don't think Facebook should have taken it to court.
Cycross has a point in that they're talking about the messages from people who are still alive might be involved.
Well, the story does say that they're trying to, like, search the account for clues as to whether or not she committed suicide. So you think they would at least, like, open up, like, okay, you can have full viewing access of this account. Like, it's just a read, not a write or delete.
Yeah. But, yeah, people who send her messages, maybe. You know, they have a right to privacy, I guess. But if I were to die right now, any correspondence in my house that's, like, not on the computer, my parents would be going through, my family would be going through, trying to figure out what happened, figure out what might be going on. I mean, shit. So, yeah, I don't know. And this gets back to the first story about ownership of your things. Who owns a Facebook account? Well, I guess in this case, Facebook does, because you relinquish all rights to it. But
Facebook is saying while she's alive, it was hers. But now that she's dead, it's Facebook's, and no one else has rights to it.
I mean, hell, I think their current terms of service means your account while you're living is barely even yours.
Well, I mean, they routinely take your account and set it back to public. Every time I've logged into mine, which admittedly is spans of years in between, it's always set back to public no matter what I've left the privacy settings on. Because I'll go in and re-secure it, lock it down, put it on private. Then, you know, 3 years later, the next time I decide I need it, because we're all on vacation and the entire family wants to use Facebook Messenger instead of, you know, SMS.
Anything else.
Yeah, I mean, and it's like, why are we using this? Oh, well, that's the only way we can get half the family to agree on. So everybody else just deal with it. Fine. And so I'll log back into it. I usually never remember the passwords. I got to do the recovery. That's always fun. And get back into the account and say, oh, look, it's public again. So it's like, I know I didn't leave it that way, but it's public again. So
speaking of leaving things public.
Yeah, so you know what? As often as Facebook likes to reset shit back to public, just don't post anything on Facebook that you care about. Just don't do it. Treat it like a resume. Assume everything on there is public. And again, you know, maybe leave. Jeez, you'd have to maintain this because you should be rotating your password every once in a while too. But it's probably not the worst idea in the world. Of course, the girl was 15, so she wouldn't have. I mean, if you're setting up a will, maybe set up backdoors to some of your accounts, or maybe, I guess maybe Facebook could set up a thing where you can put, like, if I die, these people have access to my stuff. I don't know. I mean, why not? Like, I got to fill that out on my life insurance form. Say what?
Put up like a delegate account?
Yeah. Why not? I mean, fuck, you got to fill that kind of stuff out for legal forms and stuff.
And the only other thing is, like, yeah, you have like a dual account, and a secondary account is something that's like, you know, a 60-character password kept in key pass encrypted, or, you know, something that no one's ever going to really sit there and crack. You know, so it can stay static for however many years, and yeah. that account only grants access once fired, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, that would be something that companies have to comply with as well.
Yeah, because they'd have to actually build it and maintain it. But, you know, I could see a lot of people going for something like that with a Facebook or some of these other social media accounts. You're right. It'd be a cold day in hell before Steam or iTunes ever supported something like that. But social media accounts, I could see going for it.
It wouldn't be official, and that's the hard thing. I mean, I don't know where else you'd put it. You know, put it in the cloud, and it's just as unsecure as anything else.
Well, it's, you know, the cloud, also known as other people's computers.
Ding, ding, ding.
So, I don't know. Bob, what do you think? You've been quiet.
I don't have a whole lot to say. I don't really, you know, like anything I have on any sort of digital account, I've just basically given up as a temporary thing. No expectation of long-term viability anything like that.
Yeah, I'm surprised Galaxy 15 is still working after all this time. It's been, what, 6 years? 7 years? Something like that? Shit.
Yeah.
I don't remember when we actually started. Probably something to do with the rampant alcoholism. Anyways, let's move on to something less depressing. The next one's from Ars Technica. Defense contractors stored intelligence data in Amazon Cloud.
God damn it, Bobby.
That is the correct answer, sir. On May 24th, Chris Vickery, a cyber risk analyst with the security firm UpGuard, discovered a publicly accessible cache on Amazon Web's S3 storage service that contained highly classified intelligence data. The cache was posted to an account linked to defense and intelligence contractor Booz Allen Hamilton. Or Booz? B-O-O-Z? I don't know how to say that.
Booz.
Booze. Yeah, it's government. Booze. And the files were... Oh, fuck, that's where half their damn money comes from. And the files were... Seriously, look into the alcohol tax sometime. The files were connected to the U.S. National Geospatial Intelligence Agency and U.S. military's provider of battlefield surveillance and drone surveillance imagery. It's the fucking maps. The drone pictures, dude. On a domain registration... are based on domain registration data tied to the servers linked to the S3 bucket. The data was apparently tied to Booz Allen and another contractor, Metronome. Also present in the data cache was a Booz Allen Hamilton engineer's remote login SSH keys and login credentials for at least one system in the company's data center. Where's the thunder sound effect? UpGuard's posts update is a 5:10 p.m. UpGuard's post suggested the data may have been classified up to the top secret level. A Booz Allen spokesperson told Ars that the data was not connected to classified systems. However, the credentials included in the store could have provided access to more sensitive data, including code repositories. Oh, fuck. You want to download a drone's firmware so you know what frequencies to jam so that it just crashes?
You want to grab the DoD's rainbow tables?
Yeah, no shit, right? In a statement, the NGA spokesperson said that no classified data had been disclosed by the security oversight and the storage was not directly connected to classified networks. No, it's just mirroring data on class. Okay. As a security... what the fuck is my job title? As a security guy, it doesn't matter what networks you're connected to. What matters is the data on the networks. I can have some seriously secured networks that are like impossible to break into, and that's great, except for the script that's SFTPing everything up into a fucking unprotected Amazon S3 bucket, which means it's the same data. It has nothing to do with the damn networks. It's what data is on it. People don't get that. They think, oh, the network's secure. It's fine. Blah, blah, blah.
Look at one bright side, though. They remembered to make backups.
This yeah, is where the, so you know, when they get when they get
womp, kind of would come in handy.
Time master.
When they, you know, get hit with WannaCry, God. In a statement, upon finding the cast, Vickery immediately sent an email to Booz Allen's chief information security officer, but received no response.
He was writing his. Hey,
bro, I'm boozing it up.
It's like, we found the chief security officer hanging by his tie. apparently, he'd managed to sew it into a noose, shoot himself in the back 3 times, and throw himself down an elevator shaft. The next morning, he contacted the NGA. Within 9 minutes, access to the storage bucket was cut off. In other words, some engineer read the email, said, oh shit, and fixed it. NGA takes potential disclosure of sensitive information but unclassified information seriously and immediately revoked the affected credentials, the NGA spokesperson said in the official statement. As of 8 p.m. Eastern Time on May 25th, Booz Allen Hamilton security team finally responded to Vickery and confirmed the breach. Booz Allen Hamilton, so they read the email. It was the legal team said, say nothing. Booz Allen Hamilton has suffered a number of stunning security lapses over the past few years. Most infamous, Edward Snowden was a Booz Allen contractor at the National Security Agency, but another Booz Allen Hamilton employee at the NSA, Hal Martin, was recently arrested for theft of sensitive data. Martin's cache even eclipsed Snowden's leaks in size, but I guess it didn't get leaked because they arrested him. NGA has used Amazon Clouds for a number of unclassified tasks. In 2015, NGA contracted Esri and Lockheed Martin to create a portal to unclassified geospatial intelligence based on Etsy's ArcGIS or ArcGIS. It's a common geographical program. Geospatial information, blah, 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 blah. So, anyways, they're just dumping the shit out into an S3 bucket. That's awesome.
You'd almost think the government would be smart enough to have their own cloud.
So, as somebody who's worked in AWS a little bit, you would think if they were contracting with Amazon, they would require Amazon to hit DoD standards, which the DoD standards are rather strict. Somebody would have noticed that this shit was public. Because there are a fuck ton of checks and balances you're supposed to do if you're compliant with DoD stuff. I may have looked into that. The thing with AWS, there's not logging enabled on S3 buckets unless you specifically go in and turn it on. And if you had that bucket set to publicly accessible, you probably did not think to go turn on and enable logging because you were probably using that bucket. If you intentionally set it public, you're probably thinking you were going to be hosting web content in there. If you did not intentionally set it public, actually, I think it used to be public by default, so it could just be an older one. Amazon changes their policies on what the defaults are commonly. So it's entirely possible that public was the default for a while. I think it may have been. But, yeah, somebody wasn't paying attention to the settings, which means they don't have any logging on it, so this shit's probably been downloaded thousands of times before anybody said anything about it. And they would have zero record that it's happened. Absolutely zero record that it's happened.
So, if anyone works in the security industry, scan your resumes. They're going to be coming in over the next few days.
If anybody works in the security industry, maybe you should learn the AWS permission systems before you let people put shit there. And maybe make sure your developers aren't lying to you about the content that's going to go in the S3 buckets that you're making public. Just not that I'm bitter. Anyways.
I'm just making allusions that this guy is going to get fired and be
fired.
For
no, no. If they fired him, they'd have to hire somebody else to fix it. No, he's going to fix it. Then they're going to take him out into the Las Vegas desert and tell him to start digging.
Yes.
But we're not bitter about it. No, not at all.
No.
So speaking of somebody who's not bitter, the next one is from Engadget. Man gets 180 days in jail for not handing over his iPhone PIN. U.S. courts are still torn about how to handle the defendants who refuse to give up passcodes for encrypted smartphones, judging by two recent court cases reporting the Miami Herald. In one, child abuse defendant Christopher Wheeler got 6 months in jail for failing to provide a correct code, despite pleas to the judge that he couldn't remember it. Yeah, it's a little dangerous if it's just, you know, provide the passcode or go to jail. In a different court, a judge let off Wesley Victor, accused of extortion, though he also claimed to have forgotten his iPhone code. The main difference in the cases is that 10 months have passed after Victor's initial arrest, and his lawyer argued many people, including myself, can't remember passwords from a year ago. In the same case, Victor's girlfriend and reality TV star, why am I not surprised that came in? Hinsha Voigt was ordered to divulge her code to the police, but provided one that didn't work. She's also facing contempt of court charges and is scheduled to appear next week. Both defendants are accused of threatening to release sex tapes stolen from social media celeb Yes Jules unless she paid $18,000. We talked about that story before because it was hilarious, and the amount they were after was like very specific. It's like, we want to pay off our Civic.
Yeah.
So we've talked about it before, and we joked that the only reason they were talking about the case is so that they had an excuse to go on Pinterest and look up pictures of these women. But we're not employing the reporters or perverts. No, we directly stated it. anyways, the cases underscore the dilemma faced by law enforcement officials in dealing with the newfangled encryption tech. Newfangled. Yeah, there it is. According to the Fifth Amendment, defendants have the right not to say anything that could be used against them, including, you'd think, divulging a passcode. However, the judge in the celebrity case, Charles Johnson, thinks it's not a Fifth Amendment matter. For me, this is like turning over the keys to a safe deposit box, he said. An accused may in some cases may be forced to surrender a key to a strong box containing incriminating documents, but I do not believe that he can be compelled to reveal the combination to his wall safe by word or deed. He's referring to a statement made by Supreme Court Justice John Paul Stevens in a 1998 case dissent that stated, well, it's a dissent, not so much a decision, that stated that police should be able to compel defendants to turn over a safe key but not a combination. An accused means, okay, I just read that quote. In other words, if a defendant makes use of the contents of his own mind, as the SCOTUS put it, he is protected by the Fifth Amendment. So, in Florida, where both the recent passcodes case took place, the State Court of Appeals ruled that the defendants can sometimes be compelled to give up codes based on the foregone conclusion doctrine of the Fifth Amendment. This states that if the police are reasonably certain of exactly what they're going to find, whether we're talking about papers in a safe or messages on a smartphone, then a defendant can be compelled to testify in spite of the Fifth. However, expert... I'm not aware of that one. Madman, you're the closest thing I have to a legal expert and moral guidance. What's...
foregone conclusion is how they get around fruit of the poisonous tree. If something else would have led them to it, then they can do that. But you almost... already have the knowledge, or else you wouldn't know if something else would have led you to it.
Yeah.
So, if I were to tell Fox I'm going to go shoot somebody on Tuesday, and you also, but the cops beat the information out of you, that's not admissible. But if they walk up and ask Fox and he volunteers it, they're getting around.
I got your back, man. I didn't hear shit. Stitches get stitches.
The way I look at the whole situation, like, if they have a warrant to, you know, basically search your phone, then, yeah, they should absolutely be able to compel your password. And if you don't comply, then you should probably get jail time.
Well, you know...
But if there's no warrant, then no, I don't think that's reasonable.
There's also the very real possibility that they actually forgot their passcode if it's been 10 months since they've seen that phone.
It is possible, but that's a really unfortunate situation for them, because, like, if you set that precedent, everybody is going to say, oh, I forgot my password, sorry.
That's true.
And, like,
that's true.
What do you do?
Go ahead, man.
In my defense, I remembered my passcode for my cell phone that I haven't needed since I activated. Like, the phone number. However long ago that I activated this phone company.
Oh yeah, it's probably a total line of bullshit, but you know, how can you prove that they don't?
Well, I'm just thinking, if you have, so let's take the hypothetical, someone, you know, was arrested, it's been, you know, 6 months to a year since they've seen that phone, they only really remember their passcode by muscle memory because they've used the same one for a while, but then they haven't used the muscles in years or in months, right? What if you... Okay, hypothetical situation. What if they've actually forgotten the passcode?
Not a problem. They can have it reset by the provider. They just call them.
Then why are we even bothering to compel? It's like, no, we're a court of law. Here's a warrant. Reset the damn passcode to 11111 so we can open it.
There are precedent cases where they've already tried to do that, and Apple won't do it.
Well, Apple won't do it, but... Can't, like, AT&T and shit like that get back on the phone?
Yeah, AT&T, they own Singular.
Yeah.
No, wait, what do you mean? They bought out Singular. Now it's AT&T. They have cell phones. I don't know if they produce them, though.
Well, no, they don't, but I'm thinking that, you know, usually, unless you've, like, rooted your Android phone or jailbroken your iPhone and killed all their access to it, but, well, no, because if it's the whole encryption thing, most modern smartphones are fairly rough on that. Like, you know, you turn the thing off, if you don't know the passcode, it's not unlocking. Although I suppose they could beat you up and press your thumb to the thing to unlock it if you're using the fingerprint unlock, couldn't they? So, pro tip, if you're being arrested and you're worried you might forget your passcode, just smash the cell phone as the cops are coming up. Just smash it. Hammer, you know, out the door. Ooh! No, if you're in a moving vehicle, do the whole drug thing and just throw it on the road so it clatters. Maybe you'll get lucky and the lithium battery will rupture. You know, then it's kind of a bomb thing, too, to why you're trying to get away from the cops.
Store stupid shit in my cell phone.
There you go! We have a winning answer. So. Yeah, I don't know. But apparently it's inconsistent, because in some court cases they're saying, you know, that you don't have to turn over the passcode, and others, they're holding you contempt of court for not turning over the passcode. So
it's going to be that way until one of these cases finally make it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Next story is from thenextweb.com. Ex-hamster wants to help you watch weird porn in peace.
Thank God. Wait a minute. I can watch weird porn in peace now. How are they going to make this better?
The adult entertainment titan has... There's a phrase I never thought I'd read. The adult entertainment titan has lent a helping hand to a startup aspiring to build a cutting-edge solution designed to save you from the embarrassment of getting caught in the act once and for all. Now the adult entertainment... Yeah, no shit. The adult entertainment titan is asking you to chip in for a crowdfunding campaign so the device can make it to market. The Minimize. Minimize? I don't know.
Minimize, yeah. Minimizes the window.
As it's called, is an inconspicuous sensor that leverages infrared technology to mute your speakers and hide all open windows from your desktop as soon as it detects unexpected intruders.
Well, it's a motion detector that's going to ignore my fapping.
But you pointed at the door.
Yeah, you hopefully don't have it pointed at yourself. And if the door is behind you and you're watching porn, you're an idiot.
I don't know. It could be courteous. What if I want to share these images with others?
They've got a YouTube video with cartoons explaining it. The quirky device functions in a straightforward manner. To avoid awkward encounters, users are advised to point the infrared lens in the direction they want to monitor for motion and make sure the computer remains within range, up to 65 feet or 20 meters. It's a trip killer from Tales from the Afternoon. The accompanying minimize application will then start running in the background, ready to hide your raunchy clips so you can do your thing without any fear of your kids or parents might be able to barge in on your without an invitation. In addition to the motion sensor, the cheeky startup has also developed a magnetic door sensor that sends signals to your computer anytime somebody enters your room unexpectedly. In case you are interested in the unusual solution, you can hit Indiegogo campaign and pledge $48 to get an X-Hamster branded minimized motion sensor. before you rush inhaling your Cassian excitement, remind you that one thing more humiliating than getting caught watching porn with your pants unzipped is see, it doesn't pull your pants back up now, does it?
Nope.
That's generation two.
And besides, I think I've got the fapping off in my room or my apartment covered. Now, can they prevent anyone from noticing me fapping off in, I don't know, a hotel room with other people?
Well, experience with Knox would say no now, wouldn't it?
Oh, I don't have enough booze for that.
Yeah, minimize it. No, it might be best to keep your door locked. So, anyways, the founder of the company contacted the NextWeb to give him a correction. Said it's not strictly for sex. It also works flawlessly when you are shopping. Their words, not mine, because that's fapping. That's not, you know, sex involves more than one person. It also works flawlessly when you are shopping online at work and don't want your boss to see you do it, he said, or if you have other private or sensitive info on your screen and you don't want anybody to see it. So, but yeah, the YouTube video is pretty funny because it's some dude hiding from his wife.
Oh, it's fucking horrible, too.
Yeah, it's badly animated and people are different sizes and weird shit.
That's a huge bitch.
So... all right, let's. Hey, any thoughts on the sensor? You know, minimize your windows if somebody walks in the room.
The dude is doing it wrong if he's hiding from his wife while he has the hard on. That's one of the big reasons many men have a wife.
Hey, your best bet is to just turn, make eye contact, and don't stop.
The last article, Suave, did you have anything compelling before we move on to the last article?
No, not on that one.
Okay. The last article is from New York Post. Scientists have created an earpiece that will give you an actual chill if the person you're speaking to is an AI impersonating a human.
So, what I'm hearing is none of these things have passed the Turing test.
The anti-AI AI is worn like a Bluetooth headset and uses a set of algorithms to warn you if the voice you're listening to isn't human. The algorithms are similar to the ones that allowed a computer to sound like a human in the first place. When the device detects synthesized vocal patterns, a small thermoelectric plate will alert you with a cold sensation on the back of your neck. You will literally feel a chill down your spine if the human you're talking to is a robot. It's a robot detector.
Somebody got way too high.
DT, a research agency in Australia, I'm a little disappointed RU had to drop out, created the technology as a proof of concept in just 5 days. Beyond distinguishing AI from humans, the company emphasized that the earpiece could also help separate real and fake news. The post-truth era is just getting started, the company wrote in a blog post. The media, tech giant corporations, and citizens already struggle to discern fact from fiction. And as the technology is democratized, it'll be even more prevalent. To demonstrate how it works, DT included a video in the post that used the technology on a video of Donald Trump and an AI-generated voice that sounds like him. The device correctly identified the real Donald Trump as human and the recording as robot. There you have it. Donald Trump has, in fact, been proven to be human. Not a lizard person. The company that wrote that...
Hold on. This isn't testing for lizard people. It's testing for robots.
It might
be a lizard person.
The second to last paragraph said, correctly identified the real Donald Trump as human. I am quoting New York Post.
Oh, yeah, but no, like, the software was designed to tell if it's a robot talking. Yeah. So they're just assuming he's human.
Okay.
So, like, maybe this entire set of software was created by the lizard people just so we would think that they're human. I thought about that.
Actually, I just need to get the Law and Order dum-dum, don't I?
Yeah. That probably has to come more in handy for this show.
So, the company wrote that the device is a work in progress, likely has a long way to go. I mean, it is saying Donald Trump is a human, not a lizard person. let's hope that it becomes available before all tricked into servitude by an army of human-sending AIs. Actually, given some of the voice synthesizations or some of the voice synthesizer software out there, this could actually be a really useful thing. Although I'd rather it just be a little pop-up on my screen when running the software, as opposed to this headset you have to wear that's literally going to send a chill down your spine. Because I don't know, that seems like overkill. It's like, okay, yes, I get it. You had a Peltier laying around the office, but come on.
Yeah, I think the pop-up on my cell phone saying, you're talking to a robot.
This is going to be like the next level of antivirus that you need to install on everything.
Yeah. Is it an AI? Yes or no? Actually, given the prevalence of bots on the internet, you're probably not wrong.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no. Wait a minute. I think I would prefer to talk to the AI. It may have some form of intelligence. I'm talking a lot of really stupid. But we can't make robots that dumb. I'll talk to the robot.
But the real trick would be making the robots that call the other that deal with the robots you get on the phone, anyways. Like, you get robots calling you all the time. You need a robot to answer them. And oh, wait, we had that in the 70s. It's called an answering machine. Now we call it voicemail, but whatever. So, anyways, let's see if this is correct. Did I get the right sound? I wasn't able to preview it, so random MP3 off the internet. We're just going to play it and see if I get the right one. Yes! Oh, God, what is the broadcast box doing? It's doing something else. I don't know what it's doing.
Welcome to Windows 10, motherfucker.
It's starting another copy of Chrome. Why is it starting another copy of Chrome?
If they threw that as the, we're forcing you to update, I don't know if I could be pissed.
Well, we're forcing you to update, and then it...
No, welcome to Windows 10, motherfucker. If that was the pop-up message, I'm not sure I could be pissed. I would be annoyed, but like, man, I like the guy that programmed this.
All right, let's do this. Yo! Hadouken! All right, so two things tonight for Digital Dojo. The first one, I'm fairly certain I've never done. It's called PyVPN. And it's a script to install OpenVPN, preferably on a Raspberry Pi. So if you were setting up a Raspberry Pi in your home, just as an extra way to set up a VPN at home, you have to forward some ports on your router, but this is a script for setting up OpenVPN. It's on GitHub, it's open source, it's fairly well documented, it generates the keys. It's basically a one-line command to get the thing set up and running, and truthfully, because it's Linux, you can probably do it on a regular VM or whatever without having to set up a Pi. So, anyways, it's a handy little device, and if you don't know why you would want to set up OpenVPN, I don't know that I'm going to explain it in 5 minutes or less, but pretty much, if you wanted to be able to pipe your traffic back home for whatever reason, say to get around internet filters at school or work, or if you just needed an easy way to get a connection off-site, actually in my own line of work, it's often handy to be able to bounce outside of the network and come at it like I'm an outside user so I can verify... So I can verify when the programmers have fucked up and made something public that really shouldn't be. Or marketing. Or ops. Or just really anybody. But, I'm not bitter. No. Not bitter at all.
Smoke weed every day.
I don't know where that came from. You know, if yes, Psychros, you are correct. If you're on public Wi-Fi, if you're at the Starbucks and you don't trust the Wi-Fi and you want to bounce back home so that you can be sure your traffic's not being sniffed, that's an absolutely legitimate use for it. I've been using it to test websites to make sure that, you know, internal shit and public shit are, you know, correctly set up, and often they're not because they put internal shit on the public web servers. Because why, dear God, do we let marketing web pages when they don't know what the fuck they're doing? Anyways, I need more bourbon. Bob, thoughts?
Pretty cool. I like the VPN idea. I've got a spare Raspberry Pi kicking around.
If you haven't set up Pi Hole on a Raspberry Pi, that's actually also worth doing. I know I talked about that one a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah,
I've been running that at home. It's great. It actually blocks a lot of YouTube ads on my Fire TV, which is like fantastic. Oh, nice. So, and whatever Windows 10 box I've got running around here, I've only got like 20 computers on at all times, so I don't know which one it is. It's probably the fucking broadcast box, truth be told. But one of them is still running Windows 10 telemetry, even though I've thought I've turned it off on all everything that's got Windows 10 on it. So, yeah, it's blocking that too, which is nice. Which is unfortunate because I'm probably going to get lazy because I'm like, oh, well, even if I don't get it on the client, Pi Hole get it, right? So. And then there was an update. Where's the button? So. Box, you know what I'm on about.
Yes.
All right.
Sorry, I was grabbing another beer.
Nice. All right. Last thing I have in Digital Dojo tonight is a website called urlscan.io. And what this thing does is you point it at your web page, and it'll tell you how big the web page download actually is. It'll tell you how many URLs are on it, what's being tracked on it, and what kind of JavaScript is loading. So this thing is actually really cool because, one, you can profile web pages with it. Two, if you're thinking a web page is kind of squirrely, or maybe you think it's got a lot of tracking stuff on it, you can load it up, and it'll actually tell you the IPs that are pulled by that web page. It's got a screenshot of it. How many different kinds of style sheets it pulls, fonts it's pulling in, images, how many ads are on it that are likely going to get blocked, how secure is it, how much of it responds to IPv6, how many domains it's registered. It's a nice little scanner. So I was a little surprised when I ran it at Galaxy 15. Then I remembered at some point I'd installed Google Analytics, and that's where like 90% of it's coming from, and the rest of it's the IRC bot because we don't actually host the IRC client. I just found a web page that was kind enough to give us one. So actually, yeah, if you're using the IRC client on the web page, I can't promise that what you're doing on it's not being tracked. But, you know, if you're smart enough to get an IRC, and you probably assume that everything you post in there is being tracked, because if you didn't notice, the server broadcasts your fucking internal IP address.
So, Forbes is watching.
Big Brother is always watching. Sorry, I got some new assignments at work, and they're basically, yeah, being told to watch what people do on the internet. It's horrifying. Not the task, what people do. Fuck. Like, you're in an office, for God's sake. Why are you looking at so much porn?
Gotta be hard at work.
Oh, you see, I'm going through the list, and I'm like, this is World of Warcraft. You're playing World of Warcraft at work. What the fuck? Like, how do you have a job?
No one's reported me. Please don't.
It's in reports. I can't help it. Sorry about your luck.
You'll have to tell them what the ports are.
urlscan.io is a nice little tool for profiling a website, especially if you don't trust it. It goes out and it runs it, tells you how big a site is and what all it's going to be hitting. And it's just interesting data. So if you like don't know, Especially like if you set up a website and you didn't program it, like you've got WordPress and a bunch of plugins and shit like that, or, you know, like in my case where you turn on Google Analytics and then forgot about it. That's an interesting little tool just to see what all your website does. Not only that, as you scan URLs with it, they scroll across the front page, like how long ago it scanned them. So let's see, there's a plus, a Google Plus page, intellectmind.world, which apparently didn't load, Secretary Info or Secretaro.com. It's not in English, so I have no idea what that is, but it's 7 megs. go.pardot.com/edates. So somebody's plugged in a blog, a couple of blog pages in there, so see it. Equala.com, poltech.com.au. Yeah, so you can sit there and watch what URLs people are scanning. So if you want to see web pages that somebody's probably developing, their live feed is an interesting thing to do as well. So that's all I've really got. I'm out of bourbon and don't really feel like going downstairs to get more at the moment. So
that's just sad, Morse.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. Fox, closing thoughts. I can't do future news. Suave will shoot me. He's Canadian. He's got a fucking gun. I should be terrified.
Yeah, he'll be very sorry about it.
It's like, yeah, sorry about the missile there. You'll be fine, right?
Oh,
right.
Eh?
Eh? Yeah.
Eh?
You're all good there, eh? Closing thoughts? I have nothing.
That's hey, the other show we haven't done in a
oh,
while.
Oh, shit, right.
Smoke weed every day.
Yes.
Madman, closing thoughts.
It's strange when you hear a court do something right. Maybe I'm just jaded.
Bob, closing thoughts.
I'm off to find a pop-up hell porn site to test out with the URL scanner.
Oh, that's actually a good idea. I didn't even think about just feeding random porn sites into it. Because you know somebody's going to go through the logs at some point and go, huh, I wonder what this is. Oh, God, those are cocks.
That's some penetration testing.
Damn it, now you get me curious. It's tubgirl.com, right?
Pornhub.
So we're browsing to your website, tubgirl.com. Please tell. This is where, if you were programming the site, you would put Easter eggs in there. It'd be like, you're so fucking sick. Wow, this website contacted 4 IPs in 2 countries across 3 domains and performed 6 HTTP transactions. Of those, 0 were secure, 0 were IPv6. The main IP is 198.54.117.218, located in Los Angeles and belongs to Namecheap. In total, 12 kilobytes of data was transferred, of which 15 kilobytes uncompressed. It took 1.313 seconds to load the page, 0 cookies were sent, and 0 messages to the console were logged. Namecheap, Amazon, and TeamInternet.as in Germany were the IPs that were contacted. Luckily, the screenshot did not, in fact, load, so there was one ad Amazon. Blocked.
So Amazon is now going to, like, alter your browsing history for, like, what? Wet wipes? Bleach?
I don't know! Oh, it's a parking page now. That's not nearly as much fun. Yeah, it's a Namecheap parking page.
What world?
Aww. What's we need to come up with other URLs to put in here. I don't know. What's a good one?
Motherless.
Motherless. Motherless. Dot com. Browsing to your website, motherless.com.
Fucked.
Yeah, e-fucked.
E-fucked, yeah. Well, hey, there's nothing stopping you from pulling it up while I'm doing this.
What do you think we're doing right now?
Not sure I want to see e-fucked.
Other than still being live on the air, just searching websites for this.
Let's see what they have to say about Lemon Party.
Oh. This website, Motherless, 150 requests, 7 ads blocked, Nothing was malicious, 6% was secure, 31% was IPv6, 15 domains, 17 subdomains, 17 IP addresses across 3 countries. Only a meg and 1.7 meg was transferred. So, yeah, they ran it up to 2 meg. Oh, and there's a screenshot. So now they've got a screenshot of this horrible website. So, 150 HTTP requests, 8 links, nothing on the JavaScript console, 12 cookies. It tried to set 12 cookies. Unique ID, KKK, big IP server pool, that advert pool, UTM, a bunch of UTM, cookies set there. So, yeah, nothing crazy. So, anyways, oh, and a page views, value of 1. Anyways. And of course, these URLs are showing up in the recent scan. Lemonparty.com, my list is nice. Efucked.com. Oh, we shouldn't be trolling this website.
Meatspin works. 73 35 ad blocks.
Accounts.google.com was the Meatspin. Somebody's looking at this page going, what the fuck? Somewhere in their Twitter feed, there's some SJW losing their mind right now.
The Meatspin screenshot is horrible.
Right around, baby, right around.
We're not clicking that link. So not clicking that link to see what URLs did. It's like one of those things where it's like, I'm kind of curious how much advertising tracking was on it, because it says it loaded like 23 IPs from meatspin.com, but and like Lemon Party loaded like 11 and 131 transactions. Damn. But at the same time, it's like, I don't want to click the link because I know there's a screenshot on there. So I don't want to see that. Oh, God. It's not right.
Oh, please tell me Christian Children's Network was being advertised on one of
them. Well, somebody just checked it for furryporn.com.
We started a trend.
I'm just making up URLs at this point.
Putting the worst stuff we can in there.
Hornymanatee.com.
God. There are going to be bots feeding URLs into this thing just to play advertising now. Oh, fuck. This is not right.
I'm looking at 4chan.
Well, that one might be interesting. So... did everybody get a final word?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, cool. I'm going to close the recording and just watch this page for a few minutes longer to see what kind of sick shit you people say.
Hornyrabbitchipmunk.org.
Because .com would have been strange.
Yeah. Freak.
Damn, apparently 4chan pulls 19 IPs. Let's see, 19 IPs in 3 countries across 10 domains, 60 HTTP transactions. Cloudflare. Yeah, Cloudflare is hosting 4chan, and it looks like it's mostly on Amazon now. That's interesting. I wonder when that happened. I thought that used to be a joke on 4chan. They would post pictures of the servers like sitting on the ground. And it's all Cloudflare and Amazon now, so.
When it was sold?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
It went corporate a while back. It's actually gone through, I think, 2 corporations now. They realized what they bought and decided to sell it to someone else.
Yeah, so people use a VPN or something when you're hitting these sites, because they're all fucking tracking you. 37 ads blocked, 13% secure. Yeah, this shit's all fucking tracking you. So, This is a great tool, actually, if you've got a website that claims to be all kinds of private and they're not. Like hell, there's some stuff on G15 I forgot about. So that's all I got. That's all of us have. I'm gonna just state that right now, and I'm gonna play the closing sound effects and stop recording. So where's the buttons?
Hands or Zakat. Hands on the car.
Thank you, Thigh Master.